Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 4. Ambarisha Maharaj, offended by Durvasa Muni, text 64. Naam Atmanam Ashase, Mat Bhaktai Sadhubir Vina, Trayam Chat Yantikam Brahman, Yesham Gatir Aham Para. Translation. O best of the Brahmanas, without saintly persons, for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. Any way to deal with that? Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient, but to enjoy his transcendental bliss, he requires the cooperation of his devotees. In Vrindavan, for example, although Lord Krishna is full in himself, he wants the cooperation of his devotees, like the cowherd boys and the gopis, to increase his transcendental bliss. Such pure devotees who can increase the pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly most dear to him. Not only does the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoy the company of his devotees, but because he is unlimited, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. Thus, he descends to the material world to induce the non-devotees and rebellious living entities to return home back to Godhead. He requests them to surrender unto him because, unlimited as he is, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. The Krishna Consciousness Movement is an attempt to increase the number of pure devotees of the Supreme Lord more and more. It is certain that a devotee who helps in this endeavor to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes indirectly a controller of the Supreme Lord. Although the Supreme Lord is full in six opulences, he does not feel transcendental bliss without his devotees. An example that may be cited in this regard is that if a very rich man does not have sons in a family, he does not feel happiness. Indeed, sometimes a rich man adopts a son to complete his happiness. The science of transcendental bliss is known to the pure devotee. Therefore, the pure devotee is always engaged in increasing the transcendental happiness of the Lord. Om Magana Chimanandasya Gyananjana Shadakaya Chakshur Manikamina Tasma Shri Guru Vimana Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srinivasa Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Yesterday we heard Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, as his expansion Narayan, speaking to Durvasa Muni, giving his testimony, describing his modus operandi, describing where he's at. We heard yesterday, Ambhakta Pradino, I'm completely out of the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent, because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires. I sit only within the cores of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. The point in this verse, of course, is brought out by this great Sureshwar Prabhu in his ongoing seminar. And here you have the Supreme Personality of Godhead testifying. Even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. There's something about material existence that makes us always want to be the direct ones. If there's something good going on, I've got to enjoy it directly. I've got to be in the face of enjoyment with no intervention, no middle person, just me and the enjoyment. So we transfer that attitude to our spiritual conceptions. Okay, since I'm going to give up material life, and since I'm going to do devotional service, obviously it should just be me and Krishna. Right? Go for the top. With no intervention. No middleman. Then when we listen to Krishna himself, what does he explain? Sorry, folks, it's not like that. The one who is a devotee of my devotee is most dear to me. Furthermore, as the acharyas like Narottam Das Thakur testified, Chariya Vaishnava Seva Nishtha Paiche Keva. Who do you know who ever got out of material existence without being a devotee of a devotee? Try to understand. There's that contamination of wanting to be the supreme. Now, you don't meet that many people who come right out and say that. But the implicit motivation of being the all-in-all is deep within us. Therefore, we think that, all right, I'll do service to Krishna, but it should be me and Krishna. With no intervention. It's kind of a step down from impersonalism of thinking I and Krishna are one. Instead, we think, okay, it'll just be me and Krishna with no one else around. Perhaps this notion comes from the arena of sense gratification, where when one is feeling the impulses of rajoguna, the mode of passion, you just want to isolate your object of enjoyment in a private arena, and it's just you and that person. And that way, supposedly, you're supposed to experience the peak of happiness, because it's just you and the sense object. Nothing else, no one else around. So maybe we're carrying that same sense gratification attitude into bhakti. It'll just be me and Krishna. No one gets in the way. Srila Prabhupada described his attitude to be like monkeys jumping. Monkeys are on the ground. And they see the topmost branch of the tree. That's for me. The monkeys jump up to the topmost branch. But they're monkeys. So similarly, we don't so much consider, in such foolish moments, our lack of qualification. We just consider, okay, Krishna's the best. I'm not going to be Krishna. I'm not going to merge with Krishna. But I should just relate to Krishna. It should be me and him with just no one else getting in the way. Or, this is a further manifestation of impersonalism. If I do have to go through devotees, that should be temporary. Once I reach the top, it'll just be me and Krishna. No devotees coming up the works. You know how this is described by the acharyas as the ladder notion. You climb up the ladder. You use devotees to rise spiritually, and then when you think, now I've attained, you throw the ladder away. You take on a spiritual master to elevate yourself, and then when you think that you are sufficiently advanced, okay, no need. This is, again, impersonalism. When will we understand that eternally we will be amidst devotees? And that there will be devotees closer to Krishna than us? So how does the transcendental system work? Those who are devotees of a devotee of a devotee, are they losing? Actually, the opposite is so. The more you are servant of the servant of the servant, the more you understand what is the spiritual reality. Even the topmost devotee, Srimati Radharani, thinks that the devotees she's recommending to Krishna are better than her. Krishna, please accept this devotee. This devotee is better than me. And the nature of the topmost portion of the spiritual world, amongst Krishna's most intimate confidential associates, is that they enjoy more by arranging meetings between Krishna and other devotees than they do by their own direct meeting with Krishna. So this teaches us something about the transcendental reality. What distorts our vision of the transcendental reality is this me first mentality, which is the gift of Kali Yuga. We spoke a little bit about that yesterday. Me first, for me. Okay, now that I'm taking up bhakti, still it's me first, me. Krishna is speaking as Lord Narayan to Devasamuni and giving the facts. This is how I am. I'm not at all independent, actually. Of course, the Supreme Personality of God is always independent. But he's saying that out of my own independent choice, I agree to come under the control of my devotees. So I'm still independent, then again, I'm not independent. I choose to come under the control of my devotees. Why? Because of the purity of the devotee. This attracts Krishna so much that Krishna wants to obey such devotees. You may have heard an example I give of this, something I saw directly. How you can see even in the tiny parts and parcels of Krishna, conditioned souls, illusioned by the majority, you see a distortion of the spiritual reality. How powerful persons like to come under the control of their devotees, so to speak, of their dependents. I was at the airport in Melbourne, waiting at the gate for a plane. There were about 100 persons seated or standing around waiting to board. And there was a obviously well-to-do businessman. Yeah, must have been in his late 30s. He had his family with him, wife and two kids, little daughters. And he was seated in the chair next to his wife. And the one little daughter was also seated. But then there was like a 4-year-old daughter standing in front of him. And she would point to the floor. Down, Daddy, down. And the father would just fall out of his chair onto the floor on his back. He's in full view, 100 feet. Then he would get up and sit down in the chair. And again, the daughter would say, down, Daddy, down. He would fall off the chair on his back, in full view. And this just went on and on. And of course, people were looking and smiling. Those beautiful family days that we used to know. When Sureshwar Prabhu was giving a family example yesterday, and I think you asked, you said something about how family life is Nuclear family, yes, it is
nuclear.
Nuclear family means nuclear war. And so you were kind of gently inquiring, I don't know how it is here. Here? Family? What is that? People come together, they have kids, they go apart. That's what a family is.
Yeah, that's America too.
There's much more here. Because there's no economic reason here for families to stay together. The government is the real mommy and daddy. Just pay your taxes, everything's fine. So anyway, people were relishing watching this. The big executive daddy coming under control of his little daughter. And sometimes, when I'm traveling, I can also see couples man and woman, they're walking through the airport, and of course there's shops all around, and the lady sees something she wants in the shop window. Come, come. Let's go look at this. Yes, dear, whatever you want. So I can see that the man is actually taking pride in giving up his independence. Yes, yes. Order me as you like. I can see that it's kind of, materially speaking, it's kind of a relief to like have someone that you can just say, yes, tell me what to do. Order me as you like. Of course, the man is saying like that because he envisions various rewards down the road. Everything in material life is always conditional. But still, yes, dear, what would you like? Just pick out what you want and let me know. when he says like that, I just see the lady's eyes just go. Just pick out whatever you want and let me know. Of course, the guy is thinking, you know, after making such a generous overture, there will be ample rewards in the future. I remember even one of our devotees making an immortal statement. The devotee was telling me, you know, I would just like to take my hands off the steering wheel of my life for a while and let someone else hold the wheel. That would seem to be like relief. Just, I'm tired of being the controller. Just let some dear loved one drive my life. Implicit in that, of course, is you have to trust the person. You want to come under the control of someone you trust. If you don't trust the person, then no way. Similarly, Krishna comes under the control of devotees who have no material desires. He trusts them. So much of bhakti is trying to regain Krishna's trust. We've forgotten Krishna. We've shoved Krishna aside. We're in the material world trying to be the controllers and enjoyers. And the bhakti process is reforming us so that we can regain Krishna's trust. Krishna is more eager for that to happen than we are. We always have to keep that in mind. Because sometimes we think, oh, this bhakti process is so hard. Why did Krishna make it so hard? When actually the truth is that Krishna is more eager for our success than we could ever be. That means we are making this bhakti process difficult ourselves. We are creating the obstacles. We are creating the impediments. We are the ones. As the common statement goes, we have met the enemy and it is us. Still, we like to blame Krishna. You made the bhakti process so sweet, but it's difficult. Even if you think like that, if you stick to the association of sincere devotees, you'll be able to pass over the temporary impediments. As Srila Prabhupada once said, anything can be tolerated in good association. Sometimes there are setbacks, family difficulties, devotee association difficulties, misunderstandings, or there's disease. All kinds of complexities can be there in material existence and even in our relationships with devotees. But still, if we cling to the association of sincere devotees, we can tolerate these comings and goings of the winter and summer season. Especially by gathering with devotees for hearing and chanting about Krishna, gathering with devotees for rendering selfless service, easily then we can see how eager Krishna is for us to return to him. The taste of the bhakti marg, the bhakti path, intensifies when devotional activities are performed congregationally. We would like to be subordinate, at least for some time, to someone who we can trust. What Krishna is saying here, I completely trust my pure devotees, and therefore, for all times and for all places, I'm under their control. And this way Krishna is showing you, he's the topmost lover. He's the expert in love. Yet, we fear Krishna. We think that he's not arranging enough love for us. Why is Krishna cruel? He's not allowing me to fulfill my heart. But Krishna is the expert in love. Suratanath. He's the expert of loving affairs. Will we accept his testimony? That's the question. Is this really to be believed? I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within the cores of their hearts. Well, what does that mean? Doesn't Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita, Ishwara Sarva Bhutanam Vidyeshe Arjuna Chishtati? I'm seated in everyone's hearts. Arjuna, as the conditioned souls are embedded in their machines, their bodily machines, I'm there as a super soul in everyone's heart. So what does Krishna as Narayan mean when he says, I sit only within the cores of the hearts of those devoid of material desires? It means, although he's in everyone's heart, people don't know it. They can't experience that. In that sense, you could say the situation's as good as a super soul not being there. Whereas those who are pure in heart, they know they're carrying the super soul. They want to surrender to the super soul, to the instruction of the super soul. So in other words, for those free of material desires, the Paramatma is a live reality. Whereas in other situations, amongst those who are dedicated to controlling and enjoying the material energy, the super soul is unknown. In today's verse, the Supreme Personality Godhead says, O best of the Brahmanas, without saintly persons for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. Now, do you really accept that? maybe this is just talk. There are various kinds of inflated talks in this world we've discussed before. Especially prevalent in Kali Yuga. There's pillow talk, where a man and woman say so many sweet nothings as their heads rest on the pillow. Then there's pipe talk, as Kali Yuga residents indulge in various herbal supplements. So they inhale the pipe and speak so many deep philosophical thoughts. And then there's business talk, in which you say whatever is necessary to make the sale. So maybe Krishna is just speaking these exaggerations, you know, to inspire you. Listen, without my saintly persons, I don't even desire to enjoy my own bliss, my own opulences. It could sound like, you know, exaggeration, yeah. Good rah-rah talk. Is that what you call it? Huh? Yeah, rah-rah talk. Or perhaps this is like a benign, dramatic statement made by Krishna. He means well in saying that. But it's just a good thing to say. Like sometimes when I'm visiting some householders and the husband goes out of his way, well, he doesn't show that he's going out of his way, but I know it's like it takes a real effort. He says something very nice to his other half. Very nice. And so while the wife's not looking, I give the thumbs up sign to the husband. And he kind of winks his eye like, yeah, I know that was a good one. And then you see kind of the wife kind of, what was that? She noticed that something was going on behind her back. Oh, nothing. But she couldn't catch it because she got so caught up in the, you know, in the compliment. At the same time, she detected that, was there something else going on? But she couldn't catch it because she, you know, her head was just... So maybe Krishna's doing like that to us. He's making that kind of statement. Listen, devotees, without my saintly persons, I don't desire to enjoy my own transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. Good one, huh? Well, someone was telling me, there's this book, Men Are From Jupiter or something, Women Are From Somewhere, whatever. And you're supposed to do nice things for each other and give points every time. Yeah. So, you know, if your husband opens the door for you, 6 points. Or if the wife does something nice, you know, whatever, he does something nice, you give each other points. So maybe that's what Krishna's doing here. Yeah, he wants some points. And so he's saying things like this. The supreme enjoyer is saying, I don't desire to enjoy my own transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. We spent so much time learning about the bliss of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have spent so much time learning about his opulences. And now he's saying, without saintly persons, I don't want any of this. I don't want to relish any of it. Can this be for real? Or is it exaggeration meant to inspire us? No. The acharyas point out, this is not imitation, this is not eulogy, this is not rah-rah talk. Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is revealing where he's at. And that's the fact. So it takes us some time to get our heads around this. I know when you first read Bhagavatam, you'll read these verses, and, oh, very nice, but has the full impact hit you yet? And just think, who is hearing all this? Dhirvasa Muni, the epitome of material qualification. He had everything. Mystic power, austerity. He had the favor of Lord Shiva. World renowned for his austerities, renunciation, and his powers. He had many followers. Yet in spite of his material qualifications and expertise, he could not recognize who is a devotee and what does it mean to be a devotee. Therefore, as we said yesterday, Ambarish was the object of envy from Dhirvasa Muni. He's a king. He's a householder. He lives in the palace. And yet he has more acclaim and reputation than me. People worship him as a great devotee. Where are his powers, his mystic powers? Where's his renunciation? Where's his detachment? Of course, Ambarish Maharaj's detachment and renunciation is that he could live amidst the greatest opulence and not be attached in the slightest way. And as we spoke yesterday, his wife was equally as qualified. Therefore, there was peace throughout Maharaj Ambarish's empire. All the citizens had ample opportunity to advance in spiritual life. We spoke yesterday about how Maharaj Ambarish was in a tight situation. Should he break his vrata, his vow of performing ekadasi and dwadasi, or should he wait? Or should he not wait? And in this way, the auspicious time would pass. It's a technical complication. He was supposed to finish the fast at a certain time, but that meant eating. Dhirvasa Muni hadn't come back yet from his bath. What to do? So you know, yesterday we described what happened. And we began to give a picture of Dhirvasa Muni's anger. I'd like to go back to that picture because I don't want you to look at Dhirvasa Muni as if he's some kind of alien creature who is way out there. Let's try to come to grips with our own anger. Remember the picture yesterday? Your face becomes crooked. Your eyebrows are also crooked. Your face is red. Let's try to get a good picture of that. You're pointing your finger in rage. You're so angry at someone. They're frying you, as the statement goes. They're screwing up your life as you see it. They're not doing what you want. And you feel righteous, right? You feel justified. You said you were going to do such and such. You didn't do it. That's Dhirvasa Muni. You're supposed to wait until I return from bathing to eat. You're supposed to wait before you eat. My mystic power detects you drank water. You think you're God. What kind of nonsense is this? You actually think you're God. You're masquerading as a devotee of Vishnu. We can say so many things when we're angry. You see, where there is intense desire, anger is the companion. Because of that intense desire. That's why in mundane psychology they say there's a thin line between love and hate. So many of you had experiences of clutching someone so tightly, professing your love forever, and then next month, just get out of my life. If I never see you again, it'll be too soon. This is a common experience in Kali Yuga. But you never think about how crazy this situation is. You just take it as normal. Passion is passion, and anger is anger. Life goes on. So we should learn from Devasa Muni's extraordinary anger and not see it as something so far beyond us. Anger happens on a scale. At the mild end is just grumpiness. I often get to hear it from our lady devotees how their husband's grumpy. Of course, I never hear, how, various flickering mentalities cause the man to be grumpy. That I never hear about. He's grumpy. So I always say, what is going on in your mind that could possibly produce some grumpiness in him? Nothing. I didn't do anything wrong. So what? I said one thing yesterday and changed my mind today? What's the big deal? Who could ever take offense at that? So at one end of the grumpiness scale, one end of the anger scale, rather, is grumpiness. And then at the far end is just nuclear explosion. And when the nuclear bomb goes off, it just causes extraordinary damage. You say things that you regret, but you never admit it. Even if you try to say you're sorry, the person just can't get out of their mind the words you used. That mundane expression, loose lips sink ships. You say something, and even though you regret it, you don't admit it. And even if you do apologize for it, what you said is so horrendous that the person can't get it out of their mind. They may even say, I forgive you, okay, let's get over it. But still, in their mind, those words are resounding. The anger is very destructive. The anger, the rage, just colors the whole situation and the whole relationship. There are two things that saturate relationships in the age of Kali: passion and ignorance. Passion means lust, ignorance means anger. Get those things out of your relationship and you can start to see clearly. That's why the Shastra presents, even for Grihastha Ashram, regulative principles. It's a science, those regulative principles. In the Grihastha Ashram are there for very good reasons, to reduce the bodily conception and to clear out the Rajagun and Tamagun. But Kali Yuga means we befriend passion and ignorance. It's part of life. It actually adds spice to life. Passion is all-consuming, and anger is relief. You just rage at someone. Even mundane psychologists will say like that. Just get it out. Get it out. Don't bottle it up. When you feel lusty, just be lusty. Just get it out of your system. There'll be peace afterwards. Anger, you got someone wronged you, or you feel slighted, just rage for a while. And then it all leads you in this peace. Have you ever seen this happen, the peace? But that's the propaganda. It's the propaganda of a consumer society. Consume, enjoy, passion, anger, satisfaction, fulfillment is guaranteed. Because of this propaganda, we have difficulty understanding the basic principles of bhakti. Why should I control myself? I see something, I want it, I get it. Aren't you glorified in material life by your ability to get what you want? Yes. Haven't you? Don't you remember admiring persons who could always get what they want? Acquire whatever their desire is. Those are known as successful persons. Happening persons. You want to be around those kind of persons. Materially speaking. He always gets what he wants. She always gets what she wants. I even heard. In my travels, before I got my earphones that block out all the sound. You know, glorifying each other. You know, I've noticed every man you always wanted, you always got. You can get any man you want. And vice versa. The men talk like that. I never fail. When I want to score, anytime, any place, and all the guys say, good on you, mate. That's what life's all about. That's what it's all about. This is the royal road to destruction. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, there are three gates leading to hell. Lust, anger, greed, every sane person must give them up. But giving those things up is like separating ourselves from an eternal companion. Yes, three gates to hell. Trivedam, Narakasyedam, Dwaram. What?
Nasyam.
Atmana. Yes. So he's where Prabhu is. Memorize all Bhagavad Gita as Krishna book to you. Yes.
That's for a lot of Nandamara.
So these companions, lust, anger, and greed, agreed, you know, we can, that one we can stay, yeah, okay, but lust and anger? How do you live without being lusty and angry? Is it really possible? Is it desirable? Let us try to see how frustrated material desires can make us a bit cranky. I can see that sometimes in our devotees. The men and ladies, when they're single, sometimes they get a bit cranky and a bit, you know, eccentric and, you know, just on edge. And then, yeah, they match up with someone and there's like this period of peace. All the stars in the sky have aligned properly. A new yuga has begun. You feel like the Kali Yuga has ended and that you two are the ones who are going to restart the Satya Yuga.
Hello!
Yes, you remember that? We've only just begun to live. So when you were single, you were a bit, you know, irritated and irritable and... a bit eccentric, becoming a little batty. But when the match happens, then now I'll be understood. Now I will be served. Now I'll be soothed. And of course, that phase doesn't last long. Not long before the realities become apparent. And you have to cope with some person that actually you don't know, though you thought you knew the person. what the New Agers say, two embodied mysteries are trying to live together. Two embodied mysteries. So once the novelty wears off, then the battles begin. Constant negotiations, arbitrations, discussions, misunderstandings. The real problem is our material expectations. Material expectations produce desire and anger. The anger must be there, the frustration must be there, because the desires can't be fulfilled. So therefore, the Shastra says, better you focus on rendering service to Krishna. Take shelter of the service to Krishna. So that becomes the foreground. This is necessary for any ashram, of course. Service to Krishna has to be the center stage. And then you can tolerate the various turbulences, misunderstandings. Even brahmachari, sannyas ashram, there's going to be turbulence in dealing with others. You took my spot on the floor. Move your sleeping bag. It's the age of Kali. Age of Kali means dissension, disagreement. That's the norm. So to have unity in the age of Kali is the rare thing. The normal thing is dissension, argument, conflict, breaking apart. Kali Yuga means things are always drifting apart, abruptly or gradually. In any kind of assembly or conglomeration of human beings, the tendency is to drift apart. Whether it's family life, as you heard, nuclear families become nuclear war. Whether it's even spiritual organizations, spiritual sanghas, the tendency is drifting apart. So Srila Prabhupada's transcendental genius was to always inspire us somehow to work together while we're individually serving Krishna. It's an extraordinary accomplishment. In a few years, Srila Prabhupada's mission will be celebrating its 50th anniversary. We should always understand and be aware of the tendency of Kali Yuga to break apart any kind of assembly, whether it's just man and wife, whether it's the Brahmachari Ashram, whether it's a spiritual organization. The tendency is always disintegration. So if you can deal with any relational issues in that way, if you see the context, it's Kali Yuga, things come apart, then you can be on guard. You have to know the nature of the atmosphere you're living in. So don't be shocked. Oh my God, the boat's rocking in there. A few relationship problems. That's the norm. But if somehow the things can stay together, then real progress can be achieved in Kali Yuga. So let's take note of Durvasa Muni's anger. It's legendary, but that tendency is also there in us. We don't have the mystic power, he does. We wish we did, right? Just think. You don't have any hair, you can just grab your sika and throw up the floor. Out comes a fiery, intense demon. Wouldn't that be great? You just point to your adversary and tell the fiery demon, get it. Dharmasamuni could actually do that. This is mystic power. It's a different kind of technology. So, what happened with Ambarish Maharaj? Ambarish Maharaj just stood there with folded hands. He was thinking, Dharmasamuni, he's a great yogi. He has created this demon. I should be respectful to the mystic power of Dharmasamuni. I should not try to defend myself. I should respect his tages, his power. That would be the appropriate thing for me to do. I am a king, a kshatriya. He is a brahmana. He's higher. He's gone through all this trouble to create a fiery demon. Now, you might say, is this for real? Why did he run? Why did he try to defend himself? But you see, the Bhagavatam explains that prior to this incident, the Supreme Personality of God, so pleased by Ambarish's pure bhakti, sent him his Sudarshan Chakra, his disc weapon, which would always guard Ambarish Maharaj. Even though Ambarish Maharaj was not appealing to the Supreme Personality of God for protection, out of reciprocation, his protection was arranged. So, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that in the same way, Krishna's protection is with all his devotees, even the beginning devotees. But I don't feel any protection here. I know there's good prasad, good chanting and dancing, but protection of the Supreme Personality of God? You see any protection? You have to be educated to see it. It's there, even from the very beginning. It's not that that protection is solely the property of Ambarish Maharaj. The degree of that protection is special for Ambarish Maharaj because he's a special devotee. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, yayatam mamprapanjate tam nistadaya bhagajamyam. As you deal with me, I deal with you. So the more you become sensitive to Krishna, the more Krishna reveals his unlimited and eternal sensitivity to you. This is just, you can see this as normal personal affairs. You don't like revealing your sensitivity towards someone if they have shown no sensitivity to you. You're watchful. Oh, you're being sensitive? I'll be sensitive too. I'll be a little bit more sensitive now because I think that you're going to be sensitive too. You always want to make sure that there's going to be reciprocation. You want to see, does the person like me? Even ask the person, do you like me? I've heard, you know, householders who've been married a long time, they say even after 20 years of marriage, every morning the wife is still asking, do you love me? Of course, the guy is thinking like, come on now, you know, 20 years, haven't we been through all this before? But no. I'm saying this for the benefit of the brahmacharis. Every day you gotta reinvest. It's work. You think you're taking on pleasure, but you're actually taking on a job. Daily deposits. The work is never done. Daily deposits in the bank account. That's the lingo used to describe such. You have to make daily deposits into the emotional bank account. We're so fastidious. We're so careful about our reciprocations. Why not Krishna? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, and he's the most expert in that. So he gives a general statement. As you relate to me, I relate to you. But then he shows he can exceed that if the devotee has won his trust. This actually, as explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, a competition between Krishna and the devotee. The devotee does something to please Krishna, and Krishna wants to do something more to please the devotee, and this loop just goes on and on and on. That is bhakti. It's also described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that love of Krishna is like a pool of ecstasy into which both Krishna and the devotee dive into. It's togetherness. So although Krishna in Bhagavad Gita gives his official statement, as you treat me, I treat you, it's all even, Stephen, you make one step toward me, I make one step toward you. But the Bhagavatam further reveals that Krishna far surpasses that equalness. So much so that he comes under the control of his devotee. So Durvasa Muni has to learn that. He's created this ferocious demon to annihilate Ambarish Maharaj, but the demon is annihilated by the chakra weapon of the Supreme Personality of God. Having annihilated the demon, the chakra then starts to pursue Durvasa Muni, who proceeds to use his mystic power to flee all over the universe, trying to escape the heat of the chakra burning his back. Now just see, he's the great mystic yogi, and he's so concerned about his body, whereas Ambarish Maharaj, the king, the householder, the entangled one, supposedly, he was fearless and didn't move in the face of danger. I'm not the body. If it's time for my body to go, so be it. I'll be respectful to this brahmana. That's the main thing, whether I live or die. And what was Durvasa Muni, the great mystic yogi's attitude? My body's in danger. Let me get out of here. And he uses his mystic power to flee all over the universe. Human beings have different amounts of power. So if some danger affects you, if there's an earthquake, you suddenly will run out the door. You'll run as far as you can. So Durvasa Muni was running as far as he could. But for him, running meant all over the universe. Just a different degree of power, that's all. Ants have their ability to run away from danger. Birds can fly away. Human beings can run, or you jump into your car. So Durvasa Muni did what was available to him. He had the mystic power to run all over the universe. Still, the chakra was scorching his back. Can we have some more air in here, please? So who was the first port of call for Durvasa Muni? He was able to reach Lord Brahma. And he begged Lord Brahma, please do something about this. This chakra is scorching my back. Please, please. You're the chief of the universe. Please do something. But Lord Brahma told him, when the right time comes, at the end of 311 trillion years, my life is finished. I'm trapped in time, even though my lifespan is so long, 311 trillion years. I'm trapped in time. That means I'm under the control of the Supreme Personality Godhead. What can I do for you? I can't solve your situation. I'm obedient to the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm subservient to that will. I'm just dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Durvasa Muni left Lord Brahma and he went to the abode of Lord Shiva. Now, try to understand, Shiva is Durvasa Muni's Ishtadeva, his worshipable lord. So he was shocked to hear from Shiva that Shiva couldn't do anything. Shiva told him, look, this is the way the universe works. Even I, Shiva, am subservient to the will of the Supreme Personality of God. Brahma couldn't intervene for you. I can't do it either. Both Brahma and I, we're just servants of the Supreme. So Lord Shiva told him, why don't you go to Lord Narayan himself? So both Brahma and Shiva passed the buck, so to speak. We can't do anything. You've got to water the tree at the root. Go to the source. So Durvasa Muni, by some technical arrangement, was able to enter Vaikuntha, sort of. And he was face to face with Lord Narayana. Krishna can do anything. If he wants to make a point, he can allow various things that seem not in accord with the general principles. So some other Durvasa Muni was able to show his face in Vaikuntha in some way. So he begs Narayan, please save me. Save my skin. And this is why the Supreme Personality of God is speaking this way. He's saying, in so many words, what can I do? Brahma told Durvasa Muni that, Shiva told him that, and now Lord Narayana himself is saying, what can I do? In other words, the Supreme Personality of God is telling him, yes, Brahma is dependent on me. Shiva is dependent on me, but I'm also dependent. I'm dependent on my devotee. Very extraordinary illustration of this point. It's at this point that Durvasa Muni realizes, I've got to go to Ambarish Maharaj and beg forgiveness. Otherwise, this chakra is going to annihilate me. So you see the mystic prowess of Durvasa Muni just being not simply minimized, but just being made ridiculous. He's fleeing all the universe just to save his own skin. He's thinking he's the body. The first step in spiritual life is to understand you're not the body. And Durvasa Muni is supposed to be an extraordinary mystic yogi, but he's still trapped in the bodily conception. And Ambarish Maharaj is supposed to be the king, a grihastha, a family man, wife, kids, so on and so forth. He's not at all concerned. His main concern was, I don't want Durvasa Muni feeling insulted that I'm violating his mystic power. I'll just stand here respectively with folded hands. So in this context, we're hearing the testimony from the Supreme Absolute Truth. He's not speaking in an imitating way, just making words, very beautiful words, so the devotees will be inspired to give their all in bhakti. He's actually revealing where he's at. Without the saintly devotees who made me their only destination, I don't desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulence. Now, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada, in his ecstasies, makes the point. He requests them to surrender unto him because, unlimited as he is, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. This Krishna conscious movement is an attempt to increase the number of pure devotees of the Supreme Lord more and more. It is certain that a devotee who helps in this endeavor to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes indirectly a controller of the Supreme Lord. So there we are getting powerful incentive. Yes, Krishna is unlimited. And that means He wants to see the number of his devotees, especially pure devotees, expand unlimitedly. If a devotee assists Krishna in this endeavor, that devotee can conquer the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is otherwise ajita, unconquerable. Here's our service opportunity. To dedicate our energies to increasing the number of devotees and training those devotees to be pure devotees. In that way, we can dare to consider our entering into the category of these devotees that Supreme Personality of Godhead is talking about here. Without them, I don't desire to enjoy my bliss, my opulence. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.